You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week.
Maybe you have noticed that an increasing number of Christians are concerned about planet Earth. The church has typically valued creation, certainly theoretically, but with an impending environmental crisis in many parts of the world and the prospect of the awful effects of climate change, Christians are waking up to their responsibility to care for the earth that God gave us to steward. One of the many voices within this field is provided by my guest today. I'm delighted to be joined by the Reverend Dr. Dave Buchless, the co-founder of Arusha UK and now head of theology at Arusha International. I'm looking forward to chatting to him about being a co-founder and promoter of a Bible-based approach to creation. So welcome, Dave, to the Leadership Show.
Thank you, Andy. It's good to be with you.
So what is Arusha and how did you come to be co-founder?
Yeah, so firstly, the name. Arusha is Portuguese. It simply means the rock, Arusha.
Oh, okay.
And that's because originally it began in Portugal way back in 1983. And I and my wife were co-founders of Arusha here in the UK, just at the beginning of the turn of the millennium, just beginning of 2001. So it's celebrating its silver jubilee this year. And I got involved as I became increasingly challenged as a Christian, as a church leader, about the planet, about how God felt about what we were doing to it. And I realized there were very few Christians talking about this or doing anything. And looking around, I came across Arusha, thought this is a wonderful organization, great people. Could we have it here in the UK? And that's kind of, to cut a long story short, that's how it began.
So what did you sense was the interest in creation among Christians in the UK when you first began?
Well, there seemed to be very few who were concerned. There were a few who were passionate about this, and it was something God had clearly put on their hearts. But for most people, this seemed to be an area that was kind of incidental to their faith. You know, they were glad somebody was doing it, but as long as it didn't have to be them. And some were even antagonistic. So some Christians basically seemed to say that anything to do with the environment was a bit new age, a bit dodgy theologically, that you were in danger of worshipping Mother Earth instead of Father God, too much care for seals, not for souls, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there was definitely a bit of opposition in some quarters and a lot of people kind of saying, well, you want to do it, that's fine, just don't expect me to get involved. But that's changed. It's changed hugely over the last 25 years.
Sure. And part of that, of course, is a theological misunderstanding, or at least most would say misunderstanding. So there is a passage in 2 Peter 3 which talks about the earth being burned up, and depending on how you translate that Greek word. And so many people have, and they, in any case, people have the notion of us going off to a spiritual heaven away from this nasty planet Earth, and not a concept of new heaven and new earth. And any form of continuation between this and that. So for them, they're thinking, well, why would you want to care?
Yeah, you framed the question really, really well. And I've got a lot of empathy with that point of view, because that's where I started. I was taught when I was growing up a theology that, you know, this earth is not my home. We're going to go to heaven with Jesus, and that's where we should be thinking about. And therefore, earthly things just don't matter. And yet I kept being challenged by parts of the Bible that seemed to go against that. So to take one example, in Romans 8, Paul talks about creation being liberated or set free from its bondage to decay. And I kind of thought, well, how come that's going to happen if it's all going to be destroyed and burned up? And then when I started to do some more serious theology, I learned New Testament Greek, could look at the original text of the New Testament. And I realized that those passages about burning up are not about total destruction. They're more about refining. It's the refiner's fire that gets rid of all that has been damaged and polluted, but that leaves what is really good. And to me, the really convincing thing in this is the resurrection of Jesus, because Jesus rose with a physical body that was in continuity with the body he had that he died with, because the marks of the nails and the spear were still there. And therefore, if he is the first fruits of new creation, our understanding of new creation has to be physical, and it has to have both continuity as well as transformation. And so that really got me thinking and reading and studying and praying a lot more deeply, and led me to a view now where I see the Bible as teaching that there will be judgment and destruction, but there will also be renewal and transformation for the whole creation, that God has good purposes. What he made and called very good at the beginning, he is going to restore and renew.
Let me take you back to those first, the first year, I suppose, of starting Arosha UK. You felt there was a need here. What were the biggest challenges looking ahead?
As always with starting something new, money. So funding was a big issue. At the time, I was an Anglican minister, and actually the then Bishop of London was really supportive. Well, I went and saw him and told him about the vision for this, and he said, "Well, you need to do this full time. You can't run a parish and do this." And I've got a bit of funding that for the first couple of years would help, which
Okay.
was amazing. And then we approached one of the sort of established mission agencies. That was talking about creation care as part of mission, but wasn't actually doing it, and said to them, "Would you support us in doing this?" And again, they were supportive. And then there was a lot of filling out forms and applying for grants. But funding was one of the key issues, finding other people to share the vision and do the work. And initially, that involved quite a lot of volunteers. So some of my earliest colleagues included somebody who was on maternity leave from a job with the BBC, who decided to come and help us with our communications. Somebody who was a lawyer in New York, who took a sabbatical to come and get us all legally set up properly. And a friend who was an ecologist by training, but had actually been working in a different field, who decided to give up his job, come and live with us for a while and do this work sort of as a volunteer, while finding something to earn his bread and butter. So we had some amazingly committed people who caught the vision and got involved early on, and that helped hugely.
Sure. And so the early days was about getting the message out, trying to speak at churches, maybe arrange conferences, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so two things. That was certainly part of it, getting the word out. But Arosha's always had an emphasis on actually demonstrating, not just talking about caring for creation. And so a practical project was also really important. And we launched in London. We launched in Southall, where I lived at the time. And just on the edge of Southall, is a big area that used to be known as the Minette Tip. It's land belonging to the London Borough of Hillingdon. And it was officially green space, but it had been neglected for many years. And so we decided that God was calling us to help this piece of land be transformed. So we worked with the council, with the local MP, with lots of other groups, churches, even other faiths as well, to create a vision for that site, to get it cleaned up and transformed into what it is now, which is a country park and nature reserve. So there was always a tangible, hands-on aspect to our work, not just talking about it, but actually trying to show it in physical form. And that was really important.
So, were most Sundays spent on the road at local churches, different organizations?
Yes, once I stepped out of church-based ministry, a lot of my Sundays were spent speaking all over the place, and I still do a lot of that now. But yeah, that was certainly a big part of my work, and it wasn't just local. Obviously, we wanted to get churches in London interested in this practical project, but people had heard about Arosha and its work in Portugal and elsewhere, all over the country. And people wanted to know what was now happening in the UK. So I'd find myself on the road an awful lot, which was a huge challenge for my wife. We had a young family at the time. And, as a leader, you really need to think about the impact on your family of these things. And there were times when I just had to say, "No, I can't be away. I've been away too much. Need to be at home."
And so you have for 15 years or so been part of the leadership of Arosha International. So moving from the UK to international was obviously a big change. How did that come about?
Again, it was a sense of vision and calling. I kind of realized that here in the UK, in a sense, after we'd been doing Arosha UK for about 10 or 11 years, that things were quite well established, that churches were beginning to really come on board, but that in many other countries, there was still a long, long way to go, particularly in terms of getting the theology of this across, and that Arusha was facing some big challenges in trying to do that in other parts of the world. And so I offered to Arusha International, I said, look, you've got people doing all the practical science and helping with Arusha in other countries, but I've got some training in the theology. I started a part-time PhD in it by that stage. Would you like me to come and join you? So it was kind of, I made the offer, and then it kind of went forward from there. And I joined the management team of Arusha International, and was part of that until I actually just stepped down from that 2 years ago to make space for a new colleague. And that's, again, I think this is a really important thing in leadership, recognizing where it's time to hand on to others. So my successor on the management team is younger, is female, and is Indian. And that's really important to me, that Arusha is becoming, it's passing on to the next generation, and it's more diverse globally, and in terms of gender leadership as well. So that's really important. And I support her, and technically now she's become my boss. And again, I think humility in leadership is really important, recognizing that it's not about you. As a Christian, you are never number one. You're always following Jesus. He is your leader. And therefore, when there's a time to hand over your leadership responsibility to others and to step back, make space, that's really important.
Dave, as you look back 25 years with respect to how things were, and as you look to now, what encourages you, and where do you think growth needs to still take place?
It's hugely encouraging. So Arusha was just, beginning in a handful of countries when we started. We now have national organizations in 25 countries across six continents. We've got another probably 15 countries where we've got what we call Friends of Arusha groups. So it's become really global for us, but also Christians worldwide. So part of my role with Arusha International is influencing some of the global Christian networks like the World Evangelical Alliance and the Lausanne Movement. And creation care has now come onto the agenda of so many global Christian networks. It's quite exciting, sometimes bewildering. The opportunities are huge. I mean, just last month, I was in Indonesia, where there was a gathering of all the global Bible societies. And we also had the leadership of Scripture Union International and various other Bible-based organizations. And we were launching a new mandate, biblical mandate for creation care, with all these Bible-based organizations standing behind it and saying, we support this and we're behind it. That's a transformation to see so many global Christian organizations now really recognizing this is biblical. We should have always been doing it, and we really need to do it now.
Yeah, and sadly, of course, the fact that our national media has had to shed light on the challenges, and our governments have got involved in at least giving some lip service to trying to change things, has actually meant that the conversation is at a different place than 25 years ago.
Absolutely. And the other thing I've become really aware of through traveling internationally is that for many parts of the world, this isn't a future crisis. This is a current crisis. Weather patterns are affecting farmers. Take a country like, I don't know, Mozambique in the southeast of Africa. The number of hurricanes that are hitting there, the flooding issues that they have, or somewhere like the Philippines, which is hit by 25 or 30 cyclones every year now. And these issues are causing huge problems for local people. And so this isn't a future thing. This is something they have to wrestle with now.
Looking back, Dave, how has your leadership adjusted and changed over the years? What have you learned about yourself?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've learned that I'm not perfect, that I get things wrong, that I have to keep learning. I've learned to trust other people and hand things on and not try and cling on to power. Oh, there's so much in this area. It's a continual learning. I've learned that leadership is different in different cultures, and different parts of the world express their leadership within a Christian understanding, express their leadership differently. And that you have to adapt and be sensitive to that. So within Arusha, we've tried to make our leadership more culturally diverse, and that's really, really important. So and that leadership comes to an end. Everything has its season, and there's a time as a leader to hand on to others, and that doesn't mean that you're redundant, that your job is done. Your job is then to nurture and encourage and help others. And as I'm now in my 60s, I'll be retired before too many years are gone. I think my primary role now is to raise up others into leadership, and to encourage them. So this you keep learning.
Are you alluding to the fact that in some nations, maybe a more there's more of a command control expectation on leadership rather than a facilitation and empowering dimension, and that may be as a factor?
Yeah, I think that is true. There are some countries definitely where people expect leaders to lead with a very strong L, to be out the front, to be telling you what to do. I mean, none of our human cultures are perfect, and that certainly includes British culture. But there's a sense in which the leadership of Jesus has to be our model and has to challenge what our national and cultural styles are. And it seems to me that, if we look at the leadership of Jesus, he could be pretty blunt. He could be pretty directive, but most of the time he was there shepherding and encouraging. He uses that language of shepherd so often, talking about his disciples as his little flock, describing himself as the shepherd who will lay down his life for the sheep. And that model of selfless service, servant-hearted leadership, I think that needs to transform all our national and cultural understandings of leadership.
And talk to me about the change from Arusha, UK, where perhaps you were overseeing a small team, to having to decide how to oversee sort of the 25 nations and what input you can give meaningfully within the time frames.
I think, I mean, for one thing, moving from Arusha, UK, where certainly for much of the time I was the leader, the national director. And then in Arusha International, it was much more about a team. We had a management team, a leadership team, each with different responsibilities. And there's a great advantage in that. I think where leadership can be shared within a team, it's much more healthy, because you get the different voices, the different temperaments, hopefully different genders. And different cultures where that's possible. And with an international organization, that's been absolutely critical. One of the things we've done in Arusha International is move to what we call a covenant now between Arusha International and each of the national organizations around the world. And we're not the boss telling each of the national organizations what to do. We are all signatories to this covenant. We're all there to support each other, and we have defined roles. So within Arusha International, we do have a role to coordinate, to initiate, to communicate at a global level. But our job isn't to tell the national organizations what to do and how to do it. They know that best in their context. And much of the time, we learn from them. So I think, the danger is that leaders who've got a strong vision, and I'd include myself in that, tend to kind of barrel ahead in a way that can be very focused on their personal vision and not recognize that actually other people have a vision who are part of their team, and they need to learn from that as well. And that needs to shape, and visions need to evolve and change, and therefore leadership needs to evolve and change. So I think that's the big learning for me, is that leadership needs to be a team, and it needs to be diverse.
Some listening will maybe warm to your idea. Some may be absolutely, it's a new concept of creation care, and they may want to do some reading. I don't know if I mean, you've written yourself, so I'm very happy for you to recommend your books. But are there other books as well that you would encourage? And I'll jot them down and include them in the outro as we record.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I will begin with one of my books, which sounds a bit selfish, but it's one that's ended up being translated into a whole lot of languages, and people find it helpful around the world. And it starts from the real basics. It's called Planetwise, And it goes through the biblical story in terms of God's care for creation, and then it goes through the implications for us, how that should affect our discipleship, our worship, our mission, our lifestyles. Other books, there's a, if you want to go a bit more deeper into the sort of the theology, the biblical side, there's an excellent book by an American father and son, Douglas Moo and Jonathan Moo. And it's titled, well, there's a subtitle, but the main title is just Creation Care. That's really good. There are also a whole number of good books by my good friend Ruth Valerio. Saying Yes to Life is one of those. She's also written a very good one called L is for Lifestyle. So I could mention lots and lots of books, but those are good starters.
Excellent. Well, I'm really grateful for a little bit of reading for those who are readers that they can focus on. So much appreciated. And in terms of people getting engaged with Arosh, they might think, crumbs, yeah, this is really where I'm at. Obviously they can go to your website, but there are other practical ways in which someone could join up or get involved.
Yes, so the website is simply arocha, arosha.org, and for the UK, it's .org.uk. I encourage people to look at both those websites, the UK one and the international one. In terms of the UK, the other big thing that people can do is sign up for a program called Eco Church, which Arosha UK runs. And this has been an astonishing success. It was kind of just in the process of being developed when I left the UK to join the international side. So I can be proud of it without being responsible for it. And it's in just under 10 years, it's grown to nearly 10,000 churches around the UK that have signed up to become eco churches. And it gives resources, practical advice, and a sort of a challenge to try and get bronze, silver, and gold eco church awards. So I really encourage churches to look at that. If you just Google Eco Church, you'll find that.
Fantastic. Anything I haven't asked you, Dave, that you think would be worth mentioning in our conversation?
I think you've covered most of the bases. I think that just the one PS I would add is it goes right back to something I said at the beginning, which is leaders often overwork, and the impact on yourself and your family can be quite harmful. And you know, I read lots of Christian missionary biographies when I was younger, and sadly, there were too many of those where there was a damaging impact on spouses and children of the leadership. And I would just say, if you can't be a leader in your own family, in terms of modeling healthy relationships, then what are you doing in an organization, whether it's a church or something else? So that would just be my challenge to fellow leaders out there is, and it's an area where I've made mistakes, I know, is look at the impact on your family. That's your number one role that God's given you.
Wonderful. Well, Dave, it's been fascinating to chat with you. Thank you for a whistle stop tour on your life, as it were, in Arosha, and for reminding us of the importance of creation. That should be part of our outlook as we seek to serve Christ and to be a blessing in the world that God has given us. So, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. It's been great to speak with you.
That was my conversation with the Reverend Dr. Dave Booklas, the co-founder of Arosha UK and now head of theology Arosha International. If you're wondering about the spelling of Arosha, it's A, then capital Rocha, Arosha. He mentioned a number of books. If you wanted to follow, his own book is Planet Wise. That's by Dave Booklas, Bookless. He mentioned another book, Creation Care, by Douglas Moo and Jonathan Moo, and then books by Ruth Valerio, Saying Yes to Life, and L is for Lifestyle. And if you want to find out a little bit more via the websites, then there's the Arosha UK website, which is arosha.org.uk, and then there's also the Arosha International website, which is simply arosha.org. So that's arosha.org.uk and arosha.org. And he mentioned that you could sign up if you're interested for your church to be an eco church. And there's advice in how you could embody as a church some of the principles of creation care that that Dave certainly believes are part of the biblical mandate for us to be stewards of God's world. So as always, there's plenty of archive versions of Leadership Show. Go to premier.plus, the app or the website, and type in the Leadership Show and its former name, the Leadership File. This recording is also available as a podcast, typically arriving on a Wednesday. So go to the profile, and it's the Leadership Special alongside other profile podcast material. This is typically around 25, 30 minutes. The profile material is a bit longer typically. So you can search that. There's some excellent material on the profile, as well as obviously the Leadership Special dimension of it. So this is Andy Pett, your host, thanking you for joining us and looking very much forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.